Hello and welcome to the Motoring Podcast. This is episode 3 for Wednesday the 30th of September 2015. I'm Alan.
And I'm Andrew.
And we're finally now on iTunes.
Woohoo!
I know, it's a bit more of a bit bigger woohoo than that, I think.
I know, but I didn't want to deafen you.
Oh, right, okay, so I just thought you were all being all British.
No. I am very happy, satisfied, and pleased that it's up and people have been listening. I know people have been listening because they have tweeted me to say nice things. Thank you very much, everyone.
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you hugely. We're a little chuffed. A bit chuffed. It's been quite a nice welcome to it. So thank you, guys.
Yeah, because it took us a bit to get to the point where we were prepared to not just chat to each other, but record it and say, okay, you, the internet, which is known for being so friendly, please accept us.
I've already confessed to you that I'm more nervous tonight than I have been so far, because up until now, we've been able to just kind of pull the plug and none of you would have known.
Yeah.
Nobody would know. And it would be fine. It was just Andrew and I wouldn't really speak of it again. And that's how it's going to go. Worth mentioning, there is another new podcast. So after the pair of us started a podcast because we couldn't find anything that we wanted to listen to, some other folk have started a new podcast as well, which is awesome. It's called Smooth Traffic. And it's Johnny Edge, Robert King, and Ben Pierce as well. Now, I haven't got around to listening yet, but Andrew, you have, haven't you?
Yes, I have been listening to their 3 episodes so far, and Johnny mentioned this morning that there was a 4th episode in the works, so I'm looking forward to that. It's a 20-minute, half-an-hour show, talking with probably a bit more knowledge than us.
It's not difficult, really,
no,
is it?
No, but in a nice, relaxed style. And they've got some views, which is quite funny to hear. Particularly in the last episode, there was problems for Johnny in a service 24-hour service station, which resulted in a rant.
Right.
So I thoroughly recommend the links to their podcast will be in our show notes. Thoroughly recommend giving them a try out and giving them a shout out on Twitter as well.
Yeah, I'll be giving them a listen on my way home tomorrow night. So, yep, definitely looking forward to that. So that's a little bit of intros. So shall we move on and get into the meat of the program and start off with some news?
Yes.
First one is one that you flagged up, but I'd noticed it as well. Andrew, do you want to head in with that one?
Yeah, this all happened at the similar time to the VW scandal coming out. So we missed it last week. Mm-hmm. But the managing director of Vauxhall, Tim Tozer, left with immediate effect and was replaced by Rory Harvey, who was executive director of sales at Opel Europe. Apparently, he's going on to... Mr. Tozer's going on to pursue other interests outside of the industry. And that's all... That's really being said about him leaving. So it seems odd timing because he just presided over the new Astra being unveiled and getting a lot of positive press.
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, Vauxhall's a big important company for the UK, and hopefully they keep on the track they appear to be going in. I know in episode 0 I was not complimentary of cars of old, but their newer stuff is getting a lot of good comments and a lot of praise. So I need to probably revisit their vehicles with an open heart and mind.
Yeah, no, the new Astra is getting great write-ups.
Looks good. Looks very good.
It looks great, as did the previous Astra. It looked great. And the... the current generation Corsa's got decent write-ups, and it's definitely a good-looking car. I saw one that had been lightly modified recently, and I did a double take. It looked fantastic. So it was great. Mm. Should we move to something slightly lighter? We do have a little bit of a mix tonight, actually. Something lighter. This is one from Motoring Research and the chaps over there, and it was actually Andrew Brady who flagged this one up, and that's the one about Humberside Police. I have been hiding speed cameras in farm vehicles in a bid to catch speeding bikers on rural roads in East Yorkshire. It just seems a little bit... Right, okay, let's start off with something here. I am not going to condone speeding on rural roads, okay? Absolutely not doing that.
No, speeding is not needed of any kind, because you should be able to enjoy the road at the speed limit that has been prescribed for it.
I'll polish my halo now.
Is that one for all the lawyers out there?
That is one for all the lawyers. That's really good. Can we clip that out and use that quite regularly?
Yes.
Repeat that, right? Yeah, every week. So it's part of something... Meanwhile, back on topic. It's part of Operation Achilles, which is a way of catching really high-end speeding offenders, is the term that they've used. So people who aren't just, you know, a smidgen over the limit. They are significantly over the limit. I mean, one of the Inspector Mark Hughes from Humberside Policing, according to Andrew, said that although the majority of offenders are motorcycles, a number of cars are also dealt with in this operation. We regularly record speeds in excess of the high 90s and over 100 miles an hour on roads where the national speed limit is 60. So that's what they mean by high end. They're not just... This isn't really just for the 62, 63 mile an hour. Oops, I forgot I was going down a hill. Brigade. It's for the sort of really, really nailing it type thing.
I'd love to see the actual prosecution figures for this operation and see whether that is true. I understand that the high end is where they're aiming for, and they clearly have an issue if they're prepared to go to the extent of buying a tractor.
And a horse box
and sticking mobile cameras in them, because people are routinely travelling at such high speeds. Mm-hmm. But hopefully that is the case.
Yeah. It just seemed... It was one of those ones where you spot the news story, you go, what? And then the more you read it, the sort of... It does start to make sense.
But it goes against government... what I didn't understand was that it's only guidelines that they're in vehicles that are marked, etc.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's not actually the rule, so they can always revert to the French style or the Australian style.
It must be for mobile guns, that, because in placed one, you know, the fixed cameras, they have to be clearly marked, don't they?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so the fixed speed cameras do have to be clearly marked. I mean, I've got Andrew's article here in front of me, so I'm making sure. So his wording is, this is despite advice from the government that vehicles from which mobile speed cameras can be deployed should be liveried and clearly identifiable as an enforcement vehicle. And as he clearly says, that's advice from the government. I haven't cross-checked that, actually. But yeah, it's obviously just, they're obviously reading it as just being advice and deciding they can. They're not going to follow it on this occasion to follow what they're doing. But yeah, like yourself, I'd quite like to see the numbers and just who's what on the way through. Who's what speeds they are catching. So moving on, because I think we've killed that one off. Next up. Something which I was so pleased to see whenever I got up this morning, and I was thinking, gosh, what are we going to talk about? Surely not Volkswagen again. And I saw that... I swear, I'm putting a moratorium on it after this week. And I saw that Tesla have launched the Model X. So I don't know if any of you have seen this. I'm sure you must have done. If you listen to us, by the time this is published, you definitely have seen it. Tesla Model X... It's another SUV, okay, after the other week in Frankfurt and all the SUVs.
Yay!
But it's an SUV that's based on essentially the same platform as the current Model S. So it's got all the batteries down the bottom. It's got the drivetrain's incredibly compact. And it's a seven-seater SUV, three rows of seats. The middle row move back and forth electrically on quite a weird hinging mechanism. There's not a load of space in the back, it seems, from what I've read from Car and Driver and some of the others that I've read. There's not a huge amount.
He did get in the back, in the very back.
All right, okay.
But he didn't move the seat back into place.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
But I don't think it's a long journey position.
No, I'd imagine not. A little bit like the ones in the sort of boot space of the Model S. It doesn't look like it's a long journey position. And now everyone who went on great long car journeys as a child in the back of a Volvo or the back of a Mercedes will now tell me that it was a perfectly good position for.
Yeah, but you had leg room in those.
Oh, this is true, I suppose. This is true. But there's two things that everyone's talking about. It's great, you know, it's got a humongously long range by electric car standards. I'm scrolling through a site and I now can't actually find...
250 miles.
Thank you, it's right at the bottom here, yeah. 250 miles for the performance, 257 estimated for the all-wheel drive. 0-60, under 4 seconds. Down to 3.2 seconds with ludicrous speed upgrade, all capitalized. Just not seven combined 762. My mental arithmetic does it. Brake horsepower for the performance model. Just nuts. But there's two things that everyone's talking about. Okay, it's not so much battery range. It's not so much the fact that this is Tesla's second model. There's two things. The first isn't the obvious one. The first is the ventilation system with the bioweapon defense mode.
No, it holds viruses. It's not...
No, it can create. Now, according to the website here, there are three modes. Circulate with outside air, recirculate inside air, which is, you know, my Yaris has that. And a bioweapon defense mode that creates positive pressure inside the cabin to protect occupants. So it's creating a positive pressure inside. So it's not just that it has a super HEPA filter in there.
Oh, okay. All right. I take that back then. I get back in my little cage.
Your little Faraday cage.
But the air filters themselves, it's very impressive. The level of scrubbing they do for the air quality, if yeah. You know what was being shown, the levels of smog they can keep out and everything else. I mean that is very impressive, and that's hopefully something that other car manufacturers look at.
Do you remember a while ago Saab had was there not some coating on the radiator grills of some Saabs which acted as a catalyst? And so once the air came through the radiator, in theory, it was cleaner than it had been before it went through the radiator.
I don't remember that one.
No.
But that means nothing.
could well just be my memory. And the one thing that I've been avoiding talking about are the... Now, they're American, so I don't know if it's a Falcon Wings or...
Yeah, they're Falcon Doors.
Falcon Doors.
So, and they please the inner six-year-old in me immensely.
And me.
And it was impressive when they showed them in different circumstances. When they pushed them, because I've watched the reveal YouTube video, uh-huh. And they put two big cars next to them either side, and they got the doors to open. They could sense that, and they had a low ceiling. They showed how it dealt with that. And it's very, very impressive. And that having part of the reason it was explained for having these doors was when you've got young kids, you are more with them rather than trying to slide them in, so you're in front of them, you're able to get to them easier and reach across and all that sort of stuff, which is, yeah, would have been great when my kids were in car seats, you know, the baby seats and stuff. Yeah, I think they're a great idea. I don't know how much extra weight they bring though.
I don't. Do you know what? I don't even care. I think they look awesome. The actual car itself, it's a little bit, the image, I have this feeling, okay, I'm having trouble picking out my words, but I have this feeling that it's going to be much, much better looking in the flesh than it is in stills and video.
I don't mind the front end, I hate the back.
The back end is a little bit sang-yong.
The back is X4, X6, and that new Merc with these sort of coupe crossover things.
The GLE, it's a kind of mid-level.
Which I hate, the where they've sort of, instead of them being a traditional 4x4 where it's quite square, boxy towards the back, they shave them down as though they're a coupe. And to be a passenger in the back of that, if you're anything but an adult, the view must be horrific. It must feel so claustrophobic. I mean, if you're in the very back row of that Tesla, mm-hmm. that must be so claustrophobic because you've got the very, very tiny windows either side and that's it. And then you're straight up against the second row of seats. And the way the seats work in that looked very impressive. The whole thing slid, but they didn't fold down. The top and the back didn't fold down towards the base, mm-hmm. because he talked about how you could put a baby seat in there and the whole seat could move and you could still get in the back without compromising the baby and mm-hmm. upsetting the baby. So, I mean, that's a great... I mean, there's some great touches, but I just don't like that style. I really object to that style. I'm not going to buy one because I don't have that money. But so
no, I can't. I've lost track of where the price isn't on the page I've got open.
No, you could reserve one though.
I could I now?
Well, there's a button that says reserve.
Ooh, that's true. No, I'm not going to press it. Partially because I don't have any money. Mostly because I don't have any money, actually. And I think it's quite something. I do feel that they've gone, and they've just gone, I don't know. They've put so much stuff in it. I just don't know. I don't know if they've made life so blooming difficult for themselves. There just seems lots that could go wrong. Because, I mean, they've taken the drivetrain. The drivetrain's got, there's something ridiculous, like 7 moving parts or something in the Tesla drivetrain. And so they've taken all that and say, well, we're reducing complexity. It's going to be far more reliable. So we're going to make these doors, which look and act in an awesome manner, but probably will break.
Well, I doubt that they'll break.
Really?
Yeah, I doubt it.
Okay.
I think they can't afford that sort of thing to go wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. things I like about it is there's quite small overhangs front and back considering the size of the thing. Having the fact that there's no engine in the front means you can cram that car full of seats, mm-hmm. and it's not like the issues that you have with a normal MPV, which is, great, 3 rows of seats, you now can't take any luggage.
Yeah.
That isn't the same issue there. Because you can't have a roof box, clearly.
No, well, that's true. I was just thinking, well, you can always put a roof box. And then, yeah, no, you can't have a roof box, can you?
That and the panoramic roof right up the front, which will make it feel light and airy as well. I mean, that's a nice touch. It's going to... it clearly goes like stink.
Totally.
It's going to be superbly engineered, superbly put together. I would imagine when the British motoring press get their hands on it and sit in and drive it, will be complimentary things like they have said previously. And I think it's also great that they've stuck it in a 4x4. They've made an electric 4x4. It's a bit like what I was saying about the Mitsubishi mm-hmm. PHEV. Is the showing people, look, you can have it in this mode of transport will work in all types of vehicle. And once people can become familiar with it, then it won't be alien. And the other thing is they've made it look like a normal car, pretty much, yeah. apart from the front grille. Which again means people don't go, oh, you've got one of those weird eco cars or anything like that. That's never going to be an issue.
No, it isn't. Not with those looks anyway.
But watching the presentation, it so reminded me of the tech presentations of Google and Apple. There's all this, sort of this whooping and cheering and woohoo, yeah. Oh, look, here comes a car, woohoo, you know, and it's got doors, woohoo. And you know, it was, and he was explaining it to a non-car nut audience.
Uh-huh.
So it was very much, I am explaining this to you techie people, you geeks, who don't normally give a monkeys about cars, but you now are interested because we've done this. We've melded two of you, you know, we've put technology and a drivetrain into it that you've gone, oh, that's interesting. So I now need to explain cars and safety and how we're stronger and, you know, it's stronger in the safety because they showed some accident stuff and he showed discuss some of the safety things like how it's got automatic braking and it's got side impact avoidance systems and stuff like that. So it's probably not far off being completely automatic. I mean, I would imagine it would just need a software update over your home Wi-Fi one day when legislation is sorted that way, and it goes, right, this is this, you can press this button and it's now fully autonomous vehicle, just tell it where you want it to go.
It doesn't even need your home Wi-Fi, by the way, because I can't believe I'm saying this to you of all people, because they do have a 3G card in them anyway.
Oh, good.
They do have 3G. So you don't even have to do it over your home Wi-Fi. It will just, I believe that they ask you, I'll check tomorrow. I'll check because I'm with a Tesla owner tomorrow. Okay. And I'll check to just make sure that whether or not they do ask, whether they do ask whether or not to install the next upgrade or not. I'm going to move on now before I start you on that one.
Yeah.
Next, right. I'm not saying this is a tinfoil hat free zone, folks, but
no, I think there might be an episode down the line that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We're just trying not to scare everyone off too quickly. That's
yeah. Maybe hit double figures before we do that.
Hi. Yeah. That's what I'm holding out for. I just never told you. Next one up before we get on to some of the stuff that's going to be announced in Tokyo. Very quickly. FCA, so Fiat Chrysler Automobile, accused of significant failure to reveal deaths and crashes to the US's NHTSA.
They just haven't disclosed the right information.
Didn't disclose accurate they've information
now
of injuries.
Promptly notified NHTSA. This is again from Motoring Research the website. Links will be in the show notes. They promptly notified the NHTSA of these issues and are committed to a thorough investigation to be followed by complete remediation. Now, it will be interesting to see the reaction to this in comparison to VW.
Yeah.
Because reading some of the press on the way that the ignition issue, which wasn't Fiat Chrysler, was it? It was GM.
No, it wasn't. It was GM's initial.
But how no individual has been prosecuted for that, even though the prosecutors said individuals knowingly ignored the defect. And then you look at how VW are being treated over air quality. I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit here.
You are a little bit,
treated on air quality. I know it's a different body that's investigating them, but you sort of do, and I mentioned this in the last one, you do think, hang on, for basic just lying about how much nitrogen oxide is kicked out compared to actually where people were injured and killed, it's difficult sometimes to sit there and think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even counter argue against you. I mean, other people say, well, we don't know how much, and you know, the nitrogen oxides, you know, do injure and hurt people down the line. But I can't even argue that as devil's advocate on this one. To be honest, I completely agree with you.
I mean, hopefully FCA are being fully honest, and hopefully they will get to the bottom of it, and they will find out why they weren't being honest, and it never happens again. I mean, that's all you can hope for, really. I mean, otherwise, I would imagine I would imagine some people are going to be taking over the Coles, and considering the fuss that was made in America that nobody was prosecuted, the people in FCA must be worried.
I would
individuals
imagine.
Must be worried.
Yeah, I would imagine, and this coming so close to the Volkswagen. The Volkswagen emissions stuff as well. Everybody's looking this time. There's a lot of scrutiny and a lot of people keeping an eye on what some of the big automobile companies are doing right at the moment.
Yeah, now is not a good time to be doing anything naughty.
No. I definitely recommend that people are on their best behaviours right at the moment. Can we move on to fun stuff? Please.
Yeah.
So a little bit like I was by saying in the very first teaser episode how amazed I was that all these car companies were managing to be better, faster, stronger, and be much better at meeting all the environmental and pollution targets. And then only 2 weeks later, something else happened. Last week, I was talking about Mazda. I was talking about rotary engines and how we've been talking about how they weren't, they were still developing rotary engines. And thankfully, this week, there's a teaser image out. I don't know if you've seen it. In fact, it was doing the rounds of Twitter this morning when I was having my breakfast on the train. So people probably have seen it. But they're going to unveil a new concept at the Tokyo Motor Show. Next week, I think it is, it's one of these, it's in the dark, you can kind of see the rear lights, you can see the lines of the haunches and of the roof line.
It's a great photograph.
It looks gorgeous. I want it, you know.
I do like the roof line.
It just looks great. And if it's a rotary engine and it goes with what I said last week, I'd have another rotary in a flash if I was the first owner. And it's like, well, I'm looking at that and thinking, come on, Mazda, come on. You've got 3 years, okay? I want 3 years out of my MX-5 and then I'll be back in the showroom to buy one of them. I'm not even kidding. That's it. If it looks good and if it goes the way it should, if it's got a decent rotary or whatever in it, then yeah, I love it. Love it. Anyway, that's enough for the Mazda Appreciation Society. But small sports cars and rear engine sports cars are Toyota are doing one as well. So they've got an FR concept, front engine, rear drive, small sports car as well. The images that I saw from motoring.com.au in Australia, and I'm not even going to pretend to do a funny voice for that one.
No, don't. Let's not alienate anyone just yet.
Yeah, quite. As I said, let's wait for you. To be honest, the rendering which those guys have on that site, it looks a little bit like a Suzuki Cappuccino and a Nissan Figaro kind of got carried away one night.
You're talking about the bright blue one?
I'm talking about the bright blue one.
Yeah, I don't think that's real because that is nothing like anything Toyota is releasing at the minute. There's no slashes. There's no sharp angles of the front grille and stuff like that. That's just someone has scribbled something.
It does. It looks a little bit like the sort of lower end of the motoring press. Here's something we imagined.
And the other image on that page, again, this will be in the show notes, that looks like someone's got hold of a Mazda concept and just sort of rubbed a few lines out.
It does look significantly more Toyota-ish, though.
Ish. The grill's not right, and
yeah.
If you look at the styling of their cars at the moment, the two images that are projected are not that. But again, you know, it's just no one's released any official images, so we don't know what it's going to look like. They're just taking the best stab at what it. I presume somewhere in the article it'll say something like this is what it could look like.
It says a source close to Toyota tells us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
A source close to Toyota, 1.5 litre four-cylinder engine.
Forgetting the images. Forgetting the images. Forgetting the images. It's a great idea.
It does. 980 kilo car, et cetera, et cetera. All the numbers are in Australian. Target price of less than 20,000 Australian dollars. I have no idea what that is in real money. But yeah, which looks pretty interesting. The other Toyota front engine rear-wheel drive concept is meant to be to do with its tie-up with BMW as well, on that sort of front engine rear-wheel drive platform, which I've seen muttered about, but I don't know that much. I haven't done that much research into it. So that's that. Last one. Now, the reason I've included this is not because it's big, it's fancy, it's powerful or anything. And it's Suzuki are going to be showing the IM4, but a production-ready concept. And the reason I flagged this one up is that, you know, it's a compact city car, slightly chunky, a little bit like a Renegade, but a bit smaller, actually. Is because I thought it was one of the nicest things that I saw at Geneva last year, was the original concept for that. I just looked at it and thought, that's really smart. That's a really clean car that could only be Japanese. It's sensible. It's not cute, but it's neither was it doing the whole, look at me, I'm aggressive, I have slashed flanks. Type thing. It just looked like a really nicely resolved little car, and I saw it there on the Suzuki stand. I took a bunch of photos of it because actually I just thought it was nice. So I'm really pleased that that's being moved forward.
It does look a nice little funky little car, though.
Very Japanese. It's great. So yeah, so I like the look of those. Interested to see what happens at the Tokyo show next week or so. So. Meanwhile, in our new section called Volkswagen News, you, Andrew, have been doing some proper serious research and work into this. So.
Well, the problem is we record and it's a couple of days before it comes out. That's what we're hoping for. Now, this was last week was our last episode before we'd even released on iTunes.
Yeah.
So we had no idea how long it was going to take before it went live. And as we indicated in the last show, we felt things were possibly going to move a little bit between now and the time we'd recorded. And things have slightly moved. So I had to make a few notes of what's happened between the 23rd and today, the 30th. And I shall go through these now. So on the 23rd of September, Martin Winterken resigned. The next day, a German minister confirmed European emission tests were manipulated. Skoda was also confirmed as having models that were involved in this. The UK Department of Transport announced that they were going to retest cars from a variety of manufacturers to see if this was an industry-wide issue. And on that, Autocars' John McElroy had a blog and made a good point about it was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were going to test whether in the real world it matched the test results. No, it doesn't. We all know that because it's not fit for purpose.
Yeah.
So why waste our money on doing that? Why not sit down and thrash out a meaningful, proper emissions test? But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, that involves a mix of styles and driving and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
more reflective of general people.
Stuff that's, if the second largest, stroke largest company in the world felt it needed to cheat to hit these results, then why is that? Was it just greed, or was it because they're too difficult? So, you know, that needs to be got to the bottom of. And then meaningful progress to cleaning emissions up has to be made, but it needs to be made where you're pushing manufacturers, but not pushing them so hard that they feel that their only recourse is to cheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Equally, they have to fund this research. And we as the consumer end up paying for it one way or another. It shows. But anyway, that was a digression.
It would be a very good use for any fine money, of course, that gets collected in.
Yeah, if they did do that.
Yeah, if they do. Yeah. Anyway.
So on the 25th Matthias Müller was named the new CEO, which was expected. But also Christian Klingler, who was the head of sales and marketing, left VW, which VW said was totally unrelated to recent events, but he did leave the company at the same time. And then over the weekend, on the 27th, Switzerland banned the sale of some diesel cars, VW diesel cars. And the paper Blind am Sonntag claimed that Bosch warned VW not to use the software illegally back in 2007. That was the big reveal over the weekend.
Yep, and that was some of that paperwork was thrown up by Volkswagen's own internal investigation, I believe, as well. One of the bits that I read on that's where Blind am Sonntag had got some of that information.
Oh, okay. Right.
But that was, you know, Volkswagen's internal investigation already throwing some stuff up.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's good. It's good they're being that open.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were intentionally that open, to be honest, but yeah.
Well,
yes, it is.
We talked about it last time, didn't we, that they have to be so open and honest now. Almost to the point where Joe Public could walk in and go, can I see your technical detail? You know, talk me through it, show me it all now, type. Mm-hmm. Honestly, they have to do something, because as each of their senior staff keep coming, or board members keep coming out and saying, we've completely ruined our reputation and we've ruined the trust with people who thought VW was a brand that they could trust in. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to win trust back. It really is. So,
yeah, I mean, we said it before. The kicker here is not going to be resale value. It's not going to be vehicle value. It's going to be, do people trust that brand?
Mm. Well, I mean that. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I don't want to digress right here.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
but on the 28th, it was reported that Heinz Jakob Neuser, who is head of brand development with VW, Ulrich Hackenberg, head of R&D at Aldi, and Audi, even not Aldi, Audi, technical development across VW as well, and Wolfgang Hatz, who's R&D at Porsche and engine and transmission development for VW, were all suspended. I've found that reported a couple of times, but I haven't been able to find any more details on that. Mm-hmm. On the same day, VW appointed Jones Day, a US law firm, to carry out independent external investigation into the scandal. And also, just when they didn't think it could get any worse, the German prosecutors announced that they were investigating Winterkorn, concentrating on fraud related to selling cars with defect devices fitted. So, wow. They're trying to ask, from reading between the lines, they're trying to ascertain, did he know about it? How much did he know about it? And if he did, then he's in rightly trouble.
I don't want to digress right now.
On the 29th, VW announced that up to 11 million vehicles with the EA189 diesel engine needed to be refitted. They made statements like refitted, but they meant fix the problem. Yeah. The translation came a bit wrong into English. Which was 5 million Volkswagen vehicles, mm-hmm. 2.1 million Audis, 1.2 million Skodas, 1.8 million commercial, and 700,000 Seats. That's just...
That's a lot of vehicles. That's a lot.
As I said last time, the numbers are just so vast.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, just...
They'll have to be employing departments just to deal with that. For at least a year or so, just to get them through the doors and through, you know, paying the dealerships, because, yeah, and then they're going to need the parts, whatever the parts are, whatever it is they're doing, whether it's they're removing something, but how are they going to fix the problem? And I don't know, because what's the cheapest way to fix that problem is to reduce the output of the engine, isn't it?
I don't know technically, but I would imagine that what will happen is that it will be a software fix.
Well, again, I'm no engineer, but the obvious answer is to reduce power, because If you do the same as other manufacturers, they've got the urea tank, haven't they? That
So they can squirt through.
But that needs to be maintained over time, which again adds to another cost to VW. Because no one's going to say, oh, yeah, stick something else on and I'll pay you to keep that going.
Yeah, I'd be dead happy to help get you out of this one.
Yeah. But so if it is, I mean, the most economical way to do it is going to be a software, which implies reducing output power, which then people, you know, it depends how much they are reducing it by to hit their targets. And if they can't hit the targets they are, does that mean they fail MOTs? And if they fail MOTs, I would presume they'd have to recompense the owners of those cars because it's their fault that it failed the MOT.
Well, there was a thing that somebody mentioned which wasn't even about MOTs, which was like, so are they actually type approved or not? Are people actually allowed to drive them on the road? Which is far more serious than whether or not it passes an MOT. Because your MOT might not be up for ages, whereas all of a sudden you've found that your car 4 years ago, before you even bought it, isn't actually road legal in the UK. And that's when it starts to get really bad for those, for VW.
Yeah.
Really bad indeed.
But anyway, one of the board members, Olaf Lies, which we won't make any comment about the name.
That's not what I'd read it as. I'd read it as what it shows on the screen here. But yeah,
no, that's typo.
Sorry.
Olaf Lies gave an interview to the BBC where he stated that staff acted criminally. Ooh. Now that's, you know,
that's bad.
If you are publicly coming out and saying staff have acted criminally, again, I presume it's part of their open and honest approach to dealing with the public and everyone at large. But that's to make that sort of admission is massive. So I would presume on that sort of statement, the prosecutors are in now and they have taken people away or people are on bail because...
Yeah, that's pretty chunky. It's not even are thought to have acted criminally. It's have acted criminally. And maybe it's just the phrasing. There's always that, you know, whenever it stuff is coming from German into English, it could well be translation. So let's not try and jump too much onto the exact phrasing of it. But basically, even if it isn't that, even if it's I believe, staff have acted criminally, from the gentleman's point of view. Then that's still serious.
That they didn't, the board didn't know until just before the press released it. Now, apparently, VW had been stalling the authorities in the US for a year. So how the hell did the board not know about that? If that's the case, I mean, there's more questions get opened up with every statement that's made. That's the problem with all this. We've still got so many questions, even though so much has happened in the space of time. We've still got so many questions, and how many answers we get, I don't know.
As I said, well, probably not. I would imagine that there's been a flurry for the last week, and then it's going to calm down a little bit for a few months, and there'll be ongoing grumblings.
Well, I think you'll get the mainstream press will ease off because they've done their hysterical diesels are evil. Then they moved on to manufacturers are evil. And then the diesel manufacturers are evil.
Should we just round off? Because there is one thing, and that was today Volkswagen announced that nearly 1.2 million cars in the UK are to be recalled to try and have something done about this, according to Autocar. So that's kind of where we are today, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there are a number of countries that are also investigating.
Mm-hmm. Not just Germany.
No, let me just run through the short list. So it's Australia, Canada, obviously Germany.
Yeah.
South Korea, we mentioned last time. Italy.
Similarly.
India. Norway, South Africa, New Zealand, Sweden, Mexico, the UK, obviously the US, Japan, and the EU as a more general are being getting involved in this.
It's quite interesting there, actually. I guess that not everyone's investigating this one just because of the diesel point of view, because in Japan, diesel fuel isn't really... Oh, excuse me, I'm so sorry. Oh, it's been a long day. In Japan... I started...
Honestly, we value every single listener.
Treat this with... That's terrible. I'm sorry, mate. We do take this seriously. This is
total respect of
I'm sorry, guys. I really am. I apologize profusely in it. Yes. Anyway, I would imagine that Japan, where they don't use, where basically diesel cars aren't nearly as common as they are in many of the countries listed there, you know, particularly here in Europe, are looking at it from a wider point of view. And I would imagine that as are a few of the other countries, because it dawned on me earlier on, as I was dozing gently on the plane on the way back from Sweden this morning, that hang on a minute, if people have done this with diesel engines, who's to say they haven't done it with petrol engines?
Yeah, I mean it's what we discussed.
A continuation.
We said, of course, the natural reaction is to think who else is doing it or just who isn't doing it. And then you then naturally spread from, well, it must be all engines, mustn't it?
Yeah. I would put money that it's not all engines. How's about that for a safe bet?
Okay, good. Well done. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. So it's, yeah, I don't know. Just the more I've thought about it, I mean, I talked about it last week. In some ways, I was a little bit facetious, a little bit sarcastic about it. But the more I think about it, the bigger betrayal of trust it becomes. Is basically where I've been going with that. And I re-listened to last week's podcast in the car this afternoon because I wanted to remind myself what I'd said in it. But also because I just wanted to remember where we'd got to in the story, because so much stuff's happened since. I want to remember where we were in the story. And that triggered off some of these things. I was just thinking that a little bit more deeply about it. And it did start. And I did start to go down the, doesn't necessarily just have to be diesel, does it? But there were a bunch of manufacturers that came out quite quickly earlier in the week, though, and did say, look, we promise, we really, really promise that we've not done this in any of our cars.
Well, it was implied that Mercedes and BMW were dodgy, or somebody didn't even imply. I think they named them outright, and they came straight back and went, oh, no. And they were very robust in their defence.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because...
Did you see the third one there? The third one that came back and said, no, we've never done this.
No.
There was another one. Lamborghini came back and said, we've never done this in any of our cars, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Point made, gentlemen. We know you're part of Volkswagen Group, but yeah, okay, we get it. Yes, exactly. Yes. Lamborghini, well-known users of four-cylinder diesel engines.
What if they do meld four of them together or something?
Yeah. Sorry, that was a little bit of light relief in reading all the Volkswagen stuff this week. Was Lamborghini popping up going, we've never done it.
Well, the concern I have now, obviously there are, there's more and more litigation. There's more and more potential governmental financial issues that VW have to cope with. They had put aside $6.3 billion to deal with the recall and fixing the irregularity.
Yeah.
They've not said they've put anything aside to deal with fines. And they've not said they've put anything aside, which, I mean, clearly they will have internally, but they're not, they've not mentioned this because unless, no, they won't be that daft not to. But they've not announced any sort of figure set aside for private litigation as well.
No.
Now, those numbers could dwarf that $18 billion that is the maximum potential from the emission lie in America. And at that point, you go, wow, that company goes belly up.
They wouldn't have to pay it all out in one go, though. Would they? Because
you're going to tell me that the Indian government are going to wait, or the Mexican government, or the American government, or the UK. Every single government will now want to be seen to have reacted quickly and got the maximum out of the nasty, evil company that has lied to you as the public. Because these guys want these people want to get re-elected, don't they?
They do, and they're you see, that's what it is. I'm fundamentally forgetting that politicians are behind it. That ultimately, this won't be dealt with by engineers, and it won't be dealt with completely by lawyers. Ultimately, at the people holding the power are politicians, and that with me is never a great sign. So I was just doing the reason I was quiet and I was even more stuttery than normal is I was doing a little bit of maths. I was looking at it and I was thinking, well, that's $6.3 billion, and it's 11 million cars. So how much have they put aside per car, okay, in that $6.3 billion? To try and, because any time that people say billion is a big, big number.
Yeah.
To me anyway, you know. It works out as 5,727 27, was it euros or dollars?
I think it was euros.
6.3 billion. Yeah, so 5,727 euros, 27 euro cents. Per vehicle is what they've put aside. So that is not going to cover litigation in there.
No, because that's covering someone getting being issued with a recall letter.
Yeah.
Taking their car to their local franchise dealer.
Yeah.
Who then gives them a courtesy car. The fix is made over however long that takes to make, what I presume a couple of days as a minimum. I don't know. It depends whether they can just plug it in and then it does it. Yeah. Yeah. Again, this is the problem. If it's taking something off the engine or somewhere, that's going to take more time because bits have to be unscrewed. If it's just plugging it in and a software update, that's obviously quicker.
Yeah.
And then it's paying the dealer for the time to do that.
You've forgotten something. It's also the cost of the time and effort to research what needs done and what needs fixed. That's how it turns out. It's almost $6,000 per, well, £5,000 a car.
I think they know what needs to be done because they know what they did.
Okay, so so it's the cost of making sure other people, of proving to other people that they've now undone the naughty stuff. It still doesn't seem that much. My point, actually, out of all this, despite the fact I'm saying it's £5,000-ish, €5,700 per vehicle, it's not that much. I'm sorry, it isn't. Whenever you take all of that stuff, all the things that you listed into account, you know, because they're also going to have to compensate dealers in extraness, not just pay them straight for the work, but also the dealers are going to want a little bit more to make up for the fact that VW's given them a bad name.
It depends on how much sales dies now, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And how interesting
to see someone on Twitter going along and not cancelling their Skoda outright, but changing the order for a petrol one instead.
Mm, I saw that over the weekend.
I saw that, and I thought that's a very grown-up approach.
Because there's two things now for me. One is everyone saying that the emission test, whether it's the emission test in the EU is not fit for purpose, and that we need more real world input into that, and we need to be measuring the correct stuff.
And I don't know how anyone could disagree with that particular statement.
No, And it is due for change in 2017.
I doubt it'll change before 2017.
But they haven't agreed yet, or before this came out, they hadn't come to an agreement of what the new test was going to look like. And there was some lobbying, apparently, going on, including our own government, to delay the change to the emission test. So, forgetting that, obviously now this will be a high priority to fix the emission test. The worry is that there is a monstrous overreaction where the emission test is now made so strict
mm-hmm.
that no one has any hope of doing it unless their complete R&D budget goes into engines.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a certain date, you know, basically no engines are being sold because we're still trying to catch up and make them good enough to hit this target. Hmm. Now, in an ideal world, they would say, this is the ultimate emission limit we want to be at in, I don't know, 15, 20 years, which compared to what it is now is minuscule, if not zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
you know,
it's
whatever it is, but it's tiny in comparison. And then they do increments of over, I don't know, say 5 years, mm-hmm. where they say within 5 years, your engines have to hit this. And then after that, they have to hit this. So it gives the manufacturers the ability to hit targets, which are still a bit of a stretch, but they're not so prohibitive that they feel they have to. The only recourse is to con the test. The test has to be made in a way that it cannot easily be conned as well.
Yeah.
And then that progressively gets harder, and you know that the target gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And as they are moving onwards, and it may just get to a point where everyone turns around and goes, you know what, the internal combustion engine cannot hit that level.
Mm-hmm.
We've all as manufacturers poured money into this, and we can't do it. The limit we can get to is here.
Yeah.
So, what are you saying now?
But that's, I mean, I it's thinking a lot, isn't it? To expect that the governments and to the regulatory people.
I am hoping that people are being sensible and that there is a fairness being exhibited to all sides, because there needs to be more than fairness to people's health, to consumers, because, you know, if you make it too tight or so hard that it's mega expensive but can be done, then the consumer loses out because they have to pay more, or they just don't buy, and then the manufacturer loses out. So it's because the car manufacturers employ such a large number of people, there's a balance has to be made in all this.
I'm going to put my consultant hat on for a moment. I try not to do it after like 5:30 in the evening, but whatever. It's any objectives, any set of criteria that you expect people to meet have to be what's called smart.
Yep.
Okay, and it comes from a guy called George T. Doran, which is way off topic today. Anyway, smart. So smart stands for specific, measurable, assignable, realistic, and time related. Okay, so you've got to know what the target is going to be, and it has to be a specific target. You have to be able to measure that you're getting there. Now we know that we can do both of those.
Yep.
Has to be a sideway. You've got to have an idea of who's going to be able to reach that at which point. And here's the next one. Here's the one that people forget. It has to be realistic.
Yes.
The results have to be realistically achieved.
Exactly, because if you look at the mainstream press at the moment, or particularly over the weekend, it was almost hysterical that if they had their pitchforks and flaming torches, they'd have marched down and burnt every car manufacturer, because every car manufacturer is wicked and evil. VW is the wickedest and evilest of them all, but that was pretty much the prevailing mood.
Yeah,
This is not me defending what has been done or anything like that. You can't defend anything like that, and I wouldn't want to, because if you lie to people, that's wrong. End of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, obviously, it's the mainstream press, so their whole thing is we must sell papers, so let's over dramatize something. Because people piled into Clarkson, who said, who was slightly defensive of VW, in as much as he said, you know, well, this is some numbers they've fiddled.
Yeah.
Yes, they've put out horrible emissions, but at the end of the day, they've not run someone over to do this.
No, which is what we were saying earlier on.
Yeah.
Can I just for completion?
Sorry. Yes.
To get over my OCD.
Yes.
In which way? The last one is T, of course, the smart, so it's time bound. So you've got to have a time point by which you should have reached T.
And again, we can do that.
The biggest sticking point
is the realistic, isn't it?
The realistic or relevant, whatever, which you use. I normally use realistic. But that's the tricky one. That is the tricky one. It has to be realistic with the kind of resources that it is reasonable to assume are available. And there are obviously some pretty smart resource there, given that they worked out how to footer it in the first place.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And the other point that came to me, occurred to me over the weekend was, are we going with something like this, where the second largest stroke largest company in the world felt that they couldn't put them in more money into R&D to actually hit these targets in a way that didn't do it in the same way as everyone else? Are we now on the verge of creating companies that specialize in certain things like diesel engines? So you have, John Smith Diesel Engine Limited,
mm-hmm.
and they supply
Perkins. Yeah.
BMW, Peugeot, Fiat, Vauxhall with their diesel engines.
Isn't it almost that already, though?
I know we're not far off it, but are we at the point where the car industry actually starts scaling back from these giant companies that try and do everything in-house?
It could well do. I mean, VW's
up against it, one way that they will protect themselves is they will split the company apart.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that yes. Yeah, that all they will. If it got that bad, you were talking about bankruptcy earlier on.
Yeah.
Okay. If it got that bad, then they would retire the VW name, surely. All of a sudden, we'd find that there's something different. They're called the Wolfsburg Group or something.
Well, I mean, when it comes, if it got to that level, then the German government would be involved, because
there's no way it wouldn't be,
because that would. Well, Volkswagen's one of the main reasons that Germany's bailing out the rest of Europe.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. I read a fantastic book on Volkswagen recently, which I might as well chip in, and I've now completely forgotten the name. It was a social history of Volkswagen and the Beetle and stuff. It was really excellent. But I was thinking about it today again. I can't look it up because it's actually a physical book, not a Kindle book that I bought. But it's fantastic about some of this stuff about Volkswagen over time, and just how important it is to certainly for the full city of Wolfsburg, but also for the economy of Germany in general.
Yeah.
So they're definitely. I mean, I don't think bankruptcy would ever happen, because something would happen in the background. I think Germany would much rather face the wrath of the EU legislators and courts and the time that'll take than face the loss of Volkswagen.
Right, so before we completely bore everyone to death with VW.
Yes, I forgot to set a timer, so I've got no idea. Yeah,
and
please.
I know you're beginning to get sick of it now.
I have a very short attention span. It's like, oh, God, Volkswagen again. But I think so much happened this week, we would have been crazy not to.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do, is to make sure that everyone knows that we're up to speed on it and that they're up to speed on it as well.
Yeah, as you said, I see that the revelation's slowing down now.
So I mean, one of my fears whenever we started this, mate, was that we wouldn't have anything to talk about each week. Don't really see it happening so far. And we've got that nice long list of backup things, so
yes.
We can give. Yeah,
we haven't broken out the tinfoil hat yet.
No. As I said, you're not allowed that until double figures.
Okay. Yes, there's an awful lot of links being put together.
I hate to think what that spreadsheet's like. Anyway, so should we round up for this week anyway?
Yes, I think
so. I fear that we've gone horribly over time, but I think that we've covered an awful lot today.
Yeah. So, Alan.
Yes.
If people wanted to get in touch with you, how could they best do that?
Well, it's slightly different from how it's been in other weeks.
Oh, no. Does that mean I can no longer just laugh at you as you try and spell out your Twitter name?
Thankfully, you can no longer just laugh at me whilst I spell out my Twitter name. No, I am the best place to get hold of me to send me abuse, ask me questions, any of these things is definitely on Twitter. And my Twitter handle nowadays is at AJPBradley. That's B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. So it's all one word, at AJPBradley. And that's the best and quickest and easiest way to get hold of me pretty much anywhere. What about you?
If you, again, Twitter is the best for me. If you search for, if you're not already following, at Cracked Windscreen. There's also, for this podcast, there is at Motoring Podcast.
Yep.
What's the website, Alan?
It is motoringpodcast.com. I was on a roll whenever we came up with these. And as well as that, if you've got anything that's longer form, then and is in more detail, then we do have an email address as well, which is motoringpodcast@gmail.com. But there is the ability to leave comments after the episodes as well. So we've got a kind of forum and comment system in there. Yes, comments on the internet. I can't believe I'm asking for them, but there we go. No, there is comments. So if you've got comments about what we've been talking about, things that you think we've missed, corrections we should make next week, or anything you think that we should maybe know about to follow up on stuff, then actually the comments on the motoringpodcast.com/episodes, under each episode, you can go in and leave comments. And that would be fantastic. That would be good. There. To actually hear the episodes, once again, I gave a little bit of misinformation last week. The three ways you can listen to us, four ways you can listen to us.
It sounds like it's being a Monty Python sketch.
It does, yes. I promise it's going to stop at, well, the minute it's going to stop at four, unless anybody asks for anything else. Four ways you can listen to us, you can listen to us directly from the website, so motoringpodcast.com/episodes. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on Stitcher, and you can subscribe to us on Pocket Cast as well. So Stitcher and Pocket Cast there for those of you who can't or won't use iTunes are there. If you subscribe to us on any of those, please, can you leave us a rating, preferably 5 stars. That would be great, and also a comment, because that helps push us up those iTunes ratings, those Stitcher ratings and stuff, and helps us attract more listeners. It's the best thing you could possibly do to help us and to thank us for our time. If you didn't enjoy listening and you're still listening to us on one of those three things, if you could just leave the 5-star rating and the review for something you did enjoy instead, then that would be just genius.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, if you didn't enjoy what we're doing, then do get in touch with us and let us know why.
Yeah, yes, because absolutely.
We're open to feedback. Just remember, we are human beings, though.
Yeah,
we're not open to abuse.
My parents are married and were at the time of my birth. Just to clear that one off, just so you don't have to fit that one in anyway. We're new to this. We'd love your feedback. Basically. Which rounds up this week's show, I think. I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And we'll be back next week. But in the meantime, happy motoring.